Okay, so last time Freddie did a good job of reviewing and getting us ready for this quarter. What we're going to cover today is the geography of Canaan. And again, most of this is going to be review for you, for most of you in here, but I definitely want to go over a lot of these things and hopefully give some ideas for how to present this to younger children particularly. And I think that this is one of the lessons that you can really get the younger ones involved in, get them engaged in, and they'll love this class. Many of them will. Pass them around. And by way of introduction, I was talking to, I don't see his parents in here. I guess I can talk about a kid whose parents aren't in here. But I was talking to Jacob Davis, and I was telling him about a trail run I went on, right? And he wasn't really that interested in it until I broke out the map that had all the trails. And when I showed him that map and showed him on the trail where we went, oh, he was eat up with it. And he was interacting with me and talking and asking questions. And, you know, he wanted to go there too. You know, it kind of made it real for him to see that. Just hearing me talk about, you know, what I saw didn't really do much for him. But seeing it on the map, and some kids, you know, are going to like maps more than others. That's just the way kids are, the way we all are. We have things we like better than others. But I think that's, one thing where you can get the kids really involved with these maps. Now, the map that I've given you, you've probably all seen it before. It comes right out of Bob and Sandra's book, The History and Geography of the Bible Story. It even has the page number, so gratuitously copied, just cut it out and copy it. This is just the blank map of the land of Canaan. And I've got some color maps on my presentation that I hope will show up for you. And what we're going to do today is go through this blank map and label it with some of the places. And with the kids, that is something that you can absolutely do. And here's one of the things. Perhaps you're in a room that doesn't have a projector like this. This map is so simple that anybody in here can just go to a blank whiteboard like that and draw this map up there. So what that's good for is if you just do one lesson on the geography to your kids as you're teaching it, they're not going to remember it at all. But if you take some time every class, and with kids, you know, we grown-ups, we're all mature, and we're supposed to listen and pay attention the whole time, so we can sit for 40 minutes and stay on one topic and do one activity. With the kids, not so much, right? You have to change it up. You have to change, and part of it will be an activity. You'll have, you know, time for story. You'll have time for reading. You'll have different activities that you have. I would strongly encourage you in this class, in this course coming up, to have one of those times in almost every class be a geography or a map time. You could just call it map time for the kids. I would really encourage that. And it's not that difficult to do. And again, you don't necessarily have to have a map to hand out every time. You can just walk up to the board and, you know, like, you see how simple that is? You just start, and in your mind's eye, and this is something Bob taught me right now, because sometimes he wouldn't even draw it on the board. He would just say, you see that sloping coastline like that? Has anybody ever seen Bob do that? Yeah, right. You do this. You just walk up to the board, right, and just draw your sloping coastline like that. And that's really all there is to it. And it just start up here with you get your Sea of Galilee, and you go down, and then you get the Dead Sea with that. And no, not a perfect map, right? But when the kids see that, they'll remember this map, and it'll be close enough. Okay. And then the next thing you can do is draw your rivers, and again, they don't have to be perfect. How many rivers come down on this side? Four, right? Four rivers. So you just start drawing your rivers. You know one comes down that way. You know one comes down about in the middle. You know that one of these goes into the side, about the middle of the Dead Sea. And then another one goes into the bottom of the Dead Sea. You're done. And if you really want to get it really accurate, what you might do is wherever you draw the Sea of Galilee, just come with your fingers, wipe that off, and put you a little jut out into the land, right? And everybody's going to know what that little jut, I say out into the land, out into the sea. Everybody's going to know what that little jut is, right? You can say it out loud. That's fine. Mount Carmel. Okay? And so you can do that. And so every class, you could take no more than 5 minutes and do something like that and remind the kids of this geography of the Bible story. Just like that. So I would encourage you to keep an activity like that handy and available. Now, if you can spend a little more time and plan and hand this out. And you know, I'm not big on coloring in Bible class. That's not one of my favorite things to do. But this is an exception. This is a time where you can take the younger kids and they can color and they're learning while they color. You can, and we'll go into some of the regions in a moment. And you can have them color and say, you get them to learn the regions and have them, okay, the water should be blue. And you don't want to spend too much time on it, right? But let them color the water blue. And then if you wanted to skip the water because there's so much water on a map this size, you can just skip that and say, okay, the lands that are really fertile, let's color those green. And so you can, and as you're going through this, fertile, they may not know what that word means, but then you can explain to them what the word fertile means, right? Where they could farm, where they could have livestock. That was the fertile part. Let's draw that part of the land green. You can do that. They'll have fun doing that. Now, where there were mountains, let's draw those a real dark brown. Okay? Let's go blue where the river was, and then let's go a really light brown where the desert is, like that. And that way, again, you're not wasting time coloring characters that look, who knows if they look something like what the Bible story did or not, but they're learning the lay of the land. And, you know, they're involved in it, interacting with it. So this is one of those times where you can, you know, it can be exciting for the children, but as the teacher, you have to make it that way. You have to make it exciting and reinforce it. And they can be geography whizzes by the time the quarter's over if you work with them on the map regularly. All right, another thing you can do with children is this. This is not where we're going to cover the whole quarter, but this quarter, right, we have two periods of Bible history that we're going to cover. You guys remember the 17 periods, right? Fourth, yeah, we don't need to say them in this group. I think everybody's got them. But has everyone looked at the three cycle approach that Bob, that tract that Bob has written? If you haven't read that, take time and read it. You can read it in a day. Right? Or less, really. You can read it in just a short amount of time. But take that, and what I like to do is, those 17 periods, we've got two that we're going to cover this quarter. We're going to cover the invasion and conquest of the land, and we're going to cover the judges. So right now we're looking at the invasion and conquest, and in that three-cycle approach, right, Bob takes there are five periods, and he may go in a couple more, but five periods of the invasion and conquest. Five. Can kids memorize five? They can memorize 17. So you know they can memorize five, right? So just take time at the beginning of the class and work with them memorizing these five. Okay? So we're going to say all five of these together this morning because you may or may not know those. Are we ready? Central campaign, southern campaign, northern campaign, division of the land, the eastern tribes return home. Okay? And that's really the invasion and conquest. You'll remember, just to kind of, so we're not learning these hard facts, you'll remember that they're encamped there, right, just on the east side of the Jordan, ready to go over and cross the Jordan. The first part of Joshua tells us that story of the miraculous crossing of the Jordan, how the water stopped, and then how once they got across there at Gilgal, the entire camp was circumcised. All that should have been covered last quarter, right? That because they haven't gone in and taken the land yet. But you can remind them of that, right? And then, now, right, the first real triumphant story, the beginning of the invasion and conquest, you can point out to them, alright, they were right about in here, right? They crossed over the Jordan, Jericho's right here next to the Jordan Valley, or in the Jordan Valley, right? So they're right there. What part of the land is that? Well, it's not really the northern part. It's not really the southern part. So it's the central part, right? So when they took Jericho and Bethel and Ai, right? The central campaign. Then they moved south and took southern campaign. Then they went up north towards Mount Carmel, had some battles up there about chapter 11. The northern campaign. So just three things like that. Central campaign, southern campaign, northern campaign. You draw the map, not only can they just memorize these words, but they can see it happening. That'll stick. That'll stick for the rest of their lives. Central campaign, southern campaign, northern campaign. Right? Once they had kind of conquered the land, and again, we know that they didn't really drive out, but they won key battles in each of those campaigns, right? They won key battles, and they still had to go in and drive out the lands, which they failed to do, we know. But they had conquered the land for the most part. Then you'll remember how they met there at Shechem to divide up the land, where the boundaries are listed for each part of the land. And then the eastern tribes, does everyone remember that story from last quarter? Right? How that Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh, half-tribe of Manasseh, here on the east side of the Jordan, how that they saw the land and they're like, this is fine with us over here. You remember that? Do you remember that story? And Moses had thought that they were trying to get out of going in and helping their brethren. But they said, no. We'll go and we'll help our brethren. We'll help them with the conquest of the land. And they did. They went across and they helped. And then after they divided up the land, the eastern tribes, the 2.5 tribes, were able to return back to the eastern side of the Jordan. So that's the story of the invasion and conquest. So five things. Can we memorize those? Can we say them? What if I went to the next slide? Will we be able to say them? Or the previous slide, because the next slide I think has them on it again. Alright. We ready? Central campaign, southern campaign, northern campaign, division of the land, eastern tribes return home. Okay? And if you need help, just remember the line. Central, southern, northern. And you got three out of the five, just like that. Okay? Alright. Central campaign, southern campaign, northern campaign, division of the land, eastern tribes return home. Alright, now what we can do is kind of take the book of Joshua, and this cut off the last couple that I have, the book of Joshua, and divide it up. Okay? And this doesn't divide up quite as neatly as central campaign, southern campaign, northern campaign, because there's some additional information in the book of Joshua. But the first three are pretty much right in order in the book. So chapters 5 through 8. Now, why in the world? What happened to chapters 1 through 4 of the book of Joshua? Anyone know? Why don't I have those up there? Take in? That's right. That was covered last quarter. They hadn't really begun to take the land yet, had they? So that's that logical division. That in 1 through 4, that's the story of this crossing of the Jordan and the circumcision there at Gilgal. Okay? So that was covered last quarter, right? So we're starting in chapters 5 through 8, the central campaign. It's the story of taking these lands right here, Jericho, Bethel, Ai. Okay? Then the southern campaign are in chapters 9 and 10. And then they went to the north and had some battles with the Canaanites up here in chapter 11, the northern campaign. Okay? So 5 through 8. And see, this is something that will take a little more time. And you'll probably have to revisit this. Maybe your kindergartners, this may be a little much for them, right? But, you know, once you get up early elementary, they can match numbers with these words. They can really do that and memorize that. Maybe I'm underestimating kindergartners. I don't know. I mean, there are folks who know a lot more about what kindergartners can learn than I do. So that may be, I may be underestimating them. You may be able to teach them this. So 5 through 8 is the central campaign. Okay. 9 and 10 is the southern campaign. Chapter 11 is the northern campaign. Then, in chapter 12, there's this list of kings that were conquered in those key battles in the campaigns. Right? Then 13 through 19, chapters 13 through 19, we have the division of the land. Seven chapters on the division of the land, right? Why is that? Because it goes through and lists the boundaries, right? Now, when you get to this part in the quarter, when you're teaching the children, at this part, that's when you go into, you revisit the map, and you'll get one of those maps that's divided up, and they can learn to label that map with all 12 tribes. Okay? And that brings up another point. As you're teaching this class to children, What are you going to have to review with them over and over again? If they're going to be able to label a map with all the 12 tribes, what are they going to have to know? They're going to have to know the 12 tribes, aren't they? Which is roughly equivalent to the 12 sons, right? So do you guys know those? The 12 sons? Can we say those together? Yeah, we'll give it a shot, right? All right, so I'm going to go in chronological order with the 12 sons. Okay? Instead of by the mother, we're going to go chronological order. You guys know the difference in the list, right? All right, so let's go chronological order. Are we ready? Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher, Issachar, Zebulun, Joseph, and Benjamin. All right. And then what's the difference between the list of the sons and the list of the tribes? Yeah, there's no Joseph. And so we got Ephraim and Manasseh. And also, what other one is missing? Because if we just took Joseph out and put 2, we'd have 13, wouldn't we? Levi, right? Levi never... And so there won't be any order that's Levi's, right? Oh, that brings us right up to the next, right? The cities of refuge and also the cities of the Levites are included here. So 20 through 21, cities of refuge. And then in 22, we have that story of the eastern tribes going home, right? And then 23 and 24, they aren't on there. I promise you there is a bullet that there's just not showing up. So in 23 is Joshua's farewell. You remember the farewell address he gave as he's about to pass on. The leadership is changing. And then in chapter 24, they renew their covenant there at Shechem. One of the things we're going to learn today is where in the world is Shechem? That's one of the things we're going to learn today when we get into the map. So that's an overview of the invasion and conquest. You can get those five things in mind. Get the chapter content of the book of Joshua in mind. You will have mastered this section of Bible history. You will have the groundwork for mastering this section of Bible history. Okay? And your children can learn really all of that as you're teaching them. Question? We're good up to here? All right. So helping students relate when we're talking geography. Okay? Helping them relate. If you have access to a globe, I encourage you to use it. All right? Kids today, and I guess this is really kids all the time, throughout time, have had stories, have had fairy tales. Oftentimes, those stories and fairy tales come with maps, right? And, you know, one that I can think of would be like the Lord of the Rings series. They have these nice maps of Middle Earth and all that. Can you find that on a globe? Not so much, right? Not so much. So I encourage you to take a globe. If there's some of the classrooms have them, if you have one at home, just bring it in. Bring in a globe. Show them on the globe, here's Alabama. Here's the United States. This is the earth. This same earth, just around, here's this little land we're talking about. And that helps them realize this is a real piece of land. This is not a map out of a book. I mean, yeah, it's a map out of a book. But it's not just that. You see what I'm saying? And I think that's a worthy exercise to show them, here we are, here's the land we're studying about. It is real. It's a real land. You will see this in school. This is real. So I think that can help students relate. And it shows that the stories are very real. We're learning about a real place. And I think another thing to help the students relate would be to talk about the size of the land. Bob does some in this book, in the Days of the Judges, and also in his book, The History and Geography of the Bible Story. Bob goes through comparing the land to the states and the size of the states. So I think most students, what I've said here, most students, say kindergarten and above, they will have been to Birmingham. Most of them will have driven, at some point in their lives, they will have driven to Birmingham, right? And they probably went to Birmingham, did something most all day, and came back in the same day. Most of them will have done something like that. Or maybe gone down and spent just a couple hours and come back in the same day. Okay? So they'll have some idea. And Birmingham's, to them, it's far, right? Because anytime you get in a car as a kid, it's a long way, right? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? But they'll have some concept that it's reachable, right? That Birmingham's not that far away. Then Once you ask them, hey, have you ever been to Birmingham? Then you can say, oh, from the Sea of Galilee, okay, Sea of Galilee to the Dead Sea, about 80 miles. That's not quite as far as from Athens to Birmingham. See that? You can, and so they can get an idea of how far. I don't know if that really helps a lot or not. Again, most students, she can give them an idea that this whole land, right, is nowhere near as big as the state of Alabama. Maybe about a third the size of the state of Alabama, the whole land. And the part they actually controlled was even smaller than that, because some of the land here just wasn't useful for much. So that's one, just ideas for how to relate this information to children. Helping students relate to what the land may have looked like. Okay? Most of your students will have seen a river, right? Nothing else, they've seen the Elk River. And in fact, the Elk River isn't a terrible thing to help them envision what Jordan may have looked like. Now, obviously, the Jordan was a lot curvier, but when you think of bluffs going right up to the river, there's a lot of that along the Elk River. Now, the Elk River has some places where you can get a boat and get in the river, and it has, you know, some places like that. But a lot of the Elk River, there's just bluffs that go right up, and it's not really accessible to get to the water. And that's kind of how the Jordan was. And it might not have been quite as green up to the river as the Elk River is, but you can, you know, they will have seen a river, maybe even been on a river, on a boat. And so you can talk to them about, you ever seen how it sometimes it's real steep and you couldn't get to the water from there? And that's how the Jordan was the whole way. You know, you can kind of help them see that and get an idea for what the Jordan may have looked like. May or may not, you know, by the time you get into fourth or fifth grade, they've probably at some point in time taken a family trip, maybe down to the Gulf, or maybe somewhere else to see an ocean. Okay? So you can relate that to them. And from this people's point of view, that was their ocean, right? The Mediterranean Sea, that was their ocean. So you can, I mean, it's the Mediterranean Sea, it wasn't really an ocean. But when you get close to a body of water that size, like you've been to the Gulf of Mexico, right? I mean, I know I have. You can't really tell the difference between the Gulf of Mexico and the Atlantic Ocean. The size of it really means nothing. You look out and you can't see the other side, right? That's the kind of body of water that this was. You couldn't see Cyprus and Crete standing on the shores here. You just couldn't do that. Okay? So it looks like it goes on forever. So, you know, they can get an idea of that. So they live close to an ocean, something like the Gulf, something like, you know, the Atlantic Ocean if they've been there. Maybe some have been to the Pacific Ocean. Most of your students probably will have never seen a desert. Okay? But they'll have heard about it in school, the ones who are of school age. Those who are maybe not quite in school probably will have heard a story about it. Their parents will have read to them or would have seen something on TV, something. They'll have some concept of what a desert is. And that's one of the interesting things about the land, is that it had all of that, right? It had, you know, a coastal area with a shore on a sea. It had fertile farmlands. Most of your students will have seen a mountain. Okay? Many of them will have been to the Smoky Mountains. Okay? And the Smoky Mountains in elevation aren't really that much different from what the hill country was in terms of elevation. It would have looked different. It would have been a little more rugged and different vegetation, that kind of thing. But the concept of how high those mountains are, about right. Now, as you get up to the north here, where Mount Hermon, Mount Lebanon are, those mountains get on up into the 10,000s, and we don't really have much nearby. I guess maybe one or two spots on the Smokies are up that high. But they will have seen a mountain. They probably will have been at least to Gatlinburg and have some idea of, you know, tall mountains. So you can help them get an idea. So it had that, you know, the fertile flat farmland, the mountains, like kind of like the Smokies, but not as much. A river valley. Okay? And then what happens once you get over here? Desert. Okay? So all of that. And so you can help them see that in this tiny area, they had all these different types of land. And I think that's important for them to see. Not just so that they'll know the facts, but because they'll understand these different Bible stories that happen, in different parts of the land, and they can see, get an idea of what the land would have been like, and you help them visualize the stories as you go through them. Thoughts? Questions? I think I've been over this already. Use maps, especially with the children. They'll love that. I mean, maybe not all of them, but in general, they're going to like doing that. And here's something that I've done, and it's been quite successful with, you know, younger students, is you take like this, and maybe draw my squiggly line, get rid of that, and you can come up with a list of places, and Jimmy, why don't you come up here and draw me where Jerusalem is? Now, I'm not going to do it in this class, but you see what I'm saying. Exactly. And the kids, my kids love drawing on a whiteboard. It's one of their favorite things in the world to do. And when they get up and draw, okay, Jerusalem, and they may you know, struggle with it a little bit, and they'll look to you for some guidance, give them some help, right? But when they, Jerusalem, okay? And if they get to write that, and don't worry about spelling, tell them, you don't know how to spell it, I'll spell it for you, or just do the best you can. Don't worry about that stuff for the kids. But if they get to write on the white, or you might even, for kids who aren't really skilled at writing, like maybe the lower grades, you put a dot there and I'll put the name. But I want you to put the dot. Okay? And little things like that. And for them to get up, they'll never forget where Jerusalem is if they got to write it on a whiteboard in front of the class. You see, that's something they don't get to do as much, and they'll like doing that. So that's the kind of thing you can do. Which one of these is the Jabbok River? Okay? And then you can get one of them to come up and point it to you. Or you know, the ones who are a little large, you can get them to actually write the word on there. So those are just some things that you can do with the kids. Use the whiteboard. Use handouts. Okay? And again, I mentioned earlier that you know, your younger students, you might want to get them to color the map. The older students, hey, you might not want to take class time for them to color the maps, but you can give that to them as an assignment. Color that map before you come back Wednesday night. Okay? That gives them something to do and to reinforce that geography. And then obviously use handouts of the maps. Anybody else? Thoughts? I mean, these are just ideas I had for teaching children. And I'm by no means an expert at teaching children. I teach mostly adult classes, almost exclusively. Made a career of that until just maybe a few months ago. Thoughts? Ideas? Others? We can share here? Okay. All right. So let's talk about the condition of the land. And I think this is an extremely important point, because I've known, and in fact, this point was lost on me until just a few years ago. I had somehow missed this point in my Bible study. And I think this is a very, very important point. Some of them may have seen pictures of the land, and I wouldn't be opposed to getting some pictures of the land as it is now, showing it to them. Okay? And they'll have seen pictures of it, and you heard me talk about nice farmland where they could grow things and have livestock. And when they see pictures of the land today, they're going to look at that and say, what? There's not even any grass. What are you talking about, a good land, right? And then let's look at Numbers chapter 13. This goes back to last quarter, right? Numbers chapter 13 and at verse 27. And what did the spies think about the land when they went in to spy it out? Verse 27 of Numbers 13. Flowing with milk and honey, right? So the way the land looks today is not how it has always looked. When they went in to spy out that land, oh, it truly, indeed, it flows with milk and honey. That is a good land. That was what the spies had to say about that land. They wanted that land. It was a good land. Okay. Yeah. What do they have in verse 23? Was agriculture big there? So I'd say that's a fertile land, right? Yep. Pomegranates, figs, clusters of grapes so big that not one person could carry it. It took two people to carry it. So it was a rich, rich land when the spies spied it out. At the time we're talking about right now, when they went in to take that land, this was only some 40 years earlier, okay, that we read about in Numbers 13. So it was a rich land when they went in to take it. It was a land that you wanted. Okay? And then notice in Deuteronomy chapter 11. This is again just before, these are Moses' speeches just before they go in to take the land. So I think this is, again, the part I missed is coming up. I'd always heard about it being a land flowing with milk and honey, but I don't know. I thought maybe compared to Egypt that was good. I don't know, because I'd never been to Egypt. I just didn't know. Chapter 11 of Deuteronomy, verses 10 and 11. For the land which you go to possess is not like the land of Egypt from which you have come, where you sowed your seed and watered it by foot as a vegetable garden. Right? They depended heavily on the Nile there in Egypt to irrigate their land. But the land you cross over to possess is a land of hills and valleys which drink water from the rain of heaven. Okay? No need for irrigation. Why? Rain. It's fertile. But you get all this, the climate, you get these winds from the west, prevailing winds from the west, right? Bringing in moisture, watering the land. Okay? And then there were streams and whatnot here. Sometimes so wet, crocodiles even lived there. Very moist kind of land, very fertile soil. Okay? And then you look at verses 14 and 15 of Deuteronomy 11. God says, I will give you the rain for your land in its season, early rain, latter rain, that you may gather in your grain, your new wine, and your oil. And I will send grass in your fields and your livestock, that they may eat and be filled. Okay? Verse 17. Again, he says, verse 16, take heed to yourselves, lest your heart be deceived, and you turn aside and serve other gods and worship them, lest the Lord's anger be aroused against you, and He shut up the heavens so that there be no rain, and the land yield no produce, and you perish quickly from the good land which the Lord is giving you. So, what was the condition for all this fertility and the rains and so forth? Simple condition, right? Don't serve idols. Serve God, right? Then, here's the part I missed over in Deuteronomy chapter 29. And we should know this. Okay? Your kids can know this. Beginning in verse 22. So that the coming generation of your children who rise up after you, and the foreigner who comes from a far land. So God wanted this to be obvious to the people who live there and to anyone who would come from afar, right? And when they come in and they see the plagues that is on it, and the sickness which the Lord has laid on it, the whole land is brimstone, salt and burning. And that's really, when I see pictures of the land today, that's kind of what I think. Why would they want that land? Why'd they wait 40 years to go in and take that? That was my first thought. But we have to keep in mind, it didn't look like what we see today. It was a very good land, but we know the history of Israel, right? They turned away from God, and they served idols, and all these things that are foretold here, that God would stop sending the rain, that the land would be brimstone and sulfur and salt and burning, wouldn't be a good land anymore, and that God would take them out of the land. All that is told right here in Deuteronomy 29. Okay? So we should know, of all people, we should know why the land's not good today. Because they disobeyed God.
Just part of the cities were built hell on a picture where there were 5 and 30.
Yeah, yeah. And just kind of built on top of where the old city was.
And they bring the dirt over, so it's bring all your topsoil.
Yeah, yeah.
To build the hell.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, good point. Good point. Any other thoughts, questions, comments? All right, so let's talk a bit about the geography of the land itself. The northern boundary, up here, there were two mountains, really high mountains, Mount Lebanon and Mount Hermon. Okay, Lebanon over here, and you can maybe draw this in on the map I've handed out. But over here on the west side is Mount Lebanon. Over here on the east side is Mount Hermon. Then to the south, okay, as you go to the south, as you headed south here, do you remember the typical boundaries of the land? And when the Bible talks about the land from blank to blank? From Dan to Beersheba. Okay, so where's Dan? Dan's going to be right up here. Okay, Dan. All right, and then Beersheba is going to be off down here. Beersheba. Dan to Beersheba. So south to the north. So as you get south of Beersheba, remember Abraham dug wells there? And that's kind of what the beer means in the Hebrew is well. Okay? So there were wells there. So that was a good place. As you got south of that, turned into this really kind of a semi-desert climate. Anyone remember the name of this? Oh, it's on the slide. The Negev. Okay, sometimes called the south or the Negev. And again, when you're talking about that, you might, for kids, you can teach them a new word. Negev. What's another word for Negev? The south. Right? And so that in that area, in that context, those words were used interchangeably. And then there's an oasis on down here in the Negev called, anyone know the name of that? It's where they stopped and spied out the land. A little oasis here. Kadesh Barnea. Okay? Okay, so that wasn't really in the land, but it's a key city, okay, in the stories. Kind of an oasis there in the Negev. So Beersheba is really that southern boundary. Or the Negev kind of marks that. Right? Then the natural boundary on the east, okay, as you get across here, it turns into desert fairly quickly. I mean, this land here is on a plateau and fairly useful, but as you continue to the east, what's over here on the east? The Arabian Desert. Okay? So Arabian Desert, and then off over here, I'll change my color. I can't spell Mediterranean. No. Short, or maybe you say Great Sea. Yeah, that's what they called it sometimes, the Great Sea. So those are the borders. North, south, east, and west. Okay? Those are the borders of the land. So that's the land we're talking about in between those four borders. Oh, no! So the land divides itself into four distinct parallel zones running north and south. Okay, so along here, if I had a green one, I would draw it in green. But along here, you've got the coastal plain. Okay, coastal plain. And then it kind of rose up just a little bit, and there was this little area here where there's a little more room. Okay, and that was the Shephelah. But then right through here was the hill country. So coastal plain, Shephelah would really be kind of part of that coastal plain. Very fertile, good for livestock and agriculture. And then the hill country. Then this is the Jordan Valley. And then this over here is the Transjordan Plateau. Okay? Got those? Coastal plain, hill country, Jordan Valley, and the Transjordan Plateau. For the four distinct regions that run north to south. And I think the kids can learn that. And that's what I was getting at earlier, how there are these different zones in the land. They can certainly learn that and get an idea of the way the land looked different. And here's a good, this again comes right out of Bob's book, a good look at the land. So if you're looking from the towards the north, you can see how, notice here, how the Transjordan Plateau is actually even a little higher than these mountains, right? But what happens is, it comes up very sharply out of the Jordan Valley, and it just kind of levels off. Okay? Whereas over here, it's a little more rugged. Not quite as high, but you know, you've got more peaks here in the hill country. Okay? And just to give you an idea, right, Jerusalem, 2,600 feet above sea level. So the highest mountain in Alabama is about 2,500 feet. Monticello is about, what, 1,200? So not quite this high, but as you get up towards the Smoky Mountains, there are lots of mountains that are in this 2,500 foot range. Okay? And then again, over here, we're up above 3,000, but it's just level. It's kind of a table up there. And you can see how that this is the level of the Mediterranean Sea, the plain just above that. Okay, so almost sea level over here. And then how deep below sea level the Jordan River is. And as you head to the south, it gets lower and lower below sea level to the level of the Dead Sea, which is about 1,300 feet below sea level. And then it goes down. The water is actually another 1,300 feet below that depth. So this, again, out of Bob's book, the History and Geography of the Bible Story. And then kind of looking west, so you can get an idea of some of the mountains. As you go to the north, here Mount Hermon, up around 10,000 feet. We don't have anything like that here on the east side. In the eastern country, you have to go out towards Colorado to get mountains that high. But you can see how it's, you know, definitely rugged. And just some of these, Mount Gerizim, Mount Ebal, very important. And then a city in between those was Shechem, very, very important city. So real quick, a good way to help people locate Shechem, this river right here. Let's label these rivers real quickly. The rivers here, what's this one? The top one? The Yarmuk. Okay, and this one is the Jabbok. Okay, this one is the Arnon. This is the Zered. All right, so the way I always locate Shechem, the Jabbok River made a nice little ford to cross the Jordan. Okay, one of the few places where it was, you know, kind of convenient to do so. And then as you go across and get up to the hill country, right about even with that crossing, up in the hill country is Shechem. Okay? And you know it's up in the hill country because the mountains that are on either side of it, Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim, where that the curses and blessings from Deuteronomy 28, 29 were read to the people, okay, once they got into the land. Okay? And that picture didn't turn out good at all. This is another map. And I can get you these pictures if you have a projector to kind of show you. But you'll see here's Shechem again, the Jabbok River, Shechem, Dead Sea, Jerusalem. So just some key places. Dan up here to the north. Beersheba down here to the south. So key places, and this kind of lays out where the tribes are. We'll go into this geography a little bit more later in the quarter, where we look at the division of the land. And when I'm teaching, I'm going to review this with you again and again. Thanks, Jerry. Appreciate it.